At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Today's words to live by in economics and in life go like this. Just because a politician says it doesn't make it so. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal, the 2nd of March today, Thursday. Good as always to have you along, everybody. One hates to be that guy. But when the president said this,
to be honest, I inherited a mess. It's a mess.
At his press conference 2 weeks ago,
jobs are pouring out of the country. You see what's going on with all of the companies leaving our country, going to Mexico and other places. Low pay, low wages.
It just wasn't right. I could give you the state of the macroeconomy chapter and verse right here about how jobs are back and wages are rising and confidence is and has been up. But as the saying goes, show, don't tell. So here with the Marketplace economic data point of the day, the American dollar. Stocks backed off their big gains of yesterday because, repeat after me, markets go down too. But the greenback, holy cow, has been on a tear. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore explains what's going on.
Basically, there's a party in America right now, and the rest of the world wants to crash it.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fundamental and economic data.
Samir Samana is with the Wells Fargo Investment Institute.
So if you look at, you know, initial jobless claims or leading economic indicators or a lot of the manufacturing or consumer sentiment indicators, they've all been posting highs for this cycle.
For investors, that's like three kegs, an ice luge, and a DJ. So people, investors around the world, are looking at the U.S. and saying, huh, that party looks pretty good. Let's put our money there. They're buying U.S. dollars and driving the price of the dollar up. And there's something else going on here, too. Christopher Vecchio is senior currency strategist with Daily FX.
The dollar's been lifted up the past few days on this idea strengthening that the Federal Reserve will raise rates at their March policy meeting.
A number of Fed officials have signaled they're open to raising interest rates. So, again, that German pension fund or Japanese hedge fund sees higher interest rates on the horizon here and low interest rates in the rest of the world, and it is a no-brainer where they want to put their money.
This is a problem for the president.
Derek Scissors is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. A stronger dollar makes our exports a little less competitive and widens our trade deficit.
He has said, and of course everyone agrees, we want a stronger American economy. But he's also said, and here people do disagree, he wants to shrink the trade deficit. He thinks this trade deficit costs jobs.
But economists like Bob Murphy, who teaches economics at Boston College, say exporters can adjust to short-term price increases, and it's really pretty normal for a trade deficit to widen for a little while when the economy's doing great.
Times are reasonably good. The economy's on a solid footing right now. And so a widening trade deficit as a result of a stronger dollar are more of a side effect.
Not, he says, a sign of weakness. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Topic two today, the wall. President Trump says it is going to be built. Executive orders have been signed and government bureaucracy has been set into motion. The Department of Homeland Security is getting ready to solicit bids for the design and construction of wall prototypes. And when last we checked, 346 companies had expressed interest. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that story.
Right now, the government is just testing the waters. Myra Cisse is with the Government Contractors Association.
This is one of the early on steps where we kind of call it a market survey, where they're going out checking to see who out there is qualified to deliver the scope of work.
And hundreds of companies are interested. We're talking about $20 billion in potential government money here, from logistics firms to tech companies, including several Hispanic-owned businesses. Angie Gorrell started Martinez Construction Services with her sister. She says they've been working with partners to jump on the opportunity.
We've been talking to them and coming up with some ideas, things that would be easy to install because some of these locations are very hard to get to, hard to get materials to.
The geographic challenges are just one problem facing the government. There's also the issue of land ownership.
Only about a third of the border is actually controlled by the federal government.
David Beer is with the Cato Institute.
We're likely to see some serious pushback from property owners along the border who will fight in court seizures that take their land in order to build this wall.
And those eminent domain fights can get nasty and expensive. Presidents Bush and Obama tried to build more barriers along the border, too. Denise Gilman at the University of Texas Law School followed the drama then.
When we last studied the impact of the border wall, we found that where private property was scheduled to be taken, it was most likely to affect smaller Latino families, property owners.
But to build a wall along the entire border, the government would have to buy land from everyone. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
I knew a stockbroker once who every time I talked to him, seriously, every time, he said, "The market is looking for a reason to buy." Not today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The stock of the day today, hands down, trades under the ticker symbol SNAP, Snap, parent of Snapchat, the disappearing messaging app. On the first day of trading, that is today, shares rose 44%, making Snap's founders billionaires by the time the sun sets out by the beach in Venice, California, where the company is based. The IPO is also going to be a life changer for lots of Snap's employees who are now millionaires. Marketplace's Rima Kreis has a look at the impact of so much young money in one place.
If you didn't know you were in the office of a wealth manager, the pile of fake money on Todd Morgan's desk would, yeah, you'd get it. Morgan is the head of Bel Air Investment Advisors in Los Angeles. His firm manages $7 billion in assets.
We're in the keep 'em rich business versus the make 'em rich business.
Morgan says one of the big challenges with some new tech millionaires is that they come from the startup culture. And the first thing they want to do with their new money is risk it.
They might sprinkle it around 10 different deals and maybe put $50,000 in a deal, hoping that one of them will be, you know, the next Facebook.
Morgan's firm has joined the conga line of money managers, luxury providers, and real estate agents trying to get a piece of the business generated by Snap's IPO. A mile away from Snap's office, real estate broker Michael Grady shows me around.
Condos here on the first and second floor are $1 million to $1.5 million.
Grady says the irony is that Snap's new homebuyers may pay a price for their company's success.
Value of real estate arguably could go up because now there's more purchasing power, more people are out there looking, and that raises the price.
He says there's likely to be a housing bump, but brokers shouldn't necessarily bank on a buying frenzy.
Young money has a different mentality. They're the Airbnb generation and leave it and bounce or whatever. There's a less of an ownership mentality.
And a lot of these millionaires are millionaires on paper for now. Plus, they're just beginning to wrap their minds around their money. That can be more difficult than it seems, says psychologist Stephen Goldbart. Actually, there's a name for this problem we'd all like to have.
Sudden wealth syndrome.
Goldbart coined that phrase after the first dot-com boom. He says after a windfall, there's the honeymoon phase.
Wow, this is great. Fantastic.
Then comes the identity crisis. Now what's my role in society? How do people perceive me?
Including their friends saying, well, now who are you? And give me some. And what can you do for me?
To help its employees, Snap is offering legal and financial services. Meanwhile, some employees are already getting a taste of what it's like to be targeted for their money.
Community over campus. Delete the app.
All week, demonstrators like Alexandria Yall have been outside the Snap building in Venice protesting the company's growing footprint in their neighborhood.
They're exploiting our neighborhood for their gain.
They don't call Venice Silicon Beach for nothing. And protesters are worried about all of these new millionaires flowing into the city. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
If the recent stock market highs make you want to buy some shares, although maybe not in Snap until the IPO heat comes off, huh? But if it does, you're in luck. The big three investment brokerage firms, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, and TD Ameritrade, all announced this week they are lowering their commission fees. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more on what's up with that.
Maybe it's not a Burger King versus McDonald's or Coke versus Pepsi scenario, but these brokers are in direct competition for you to pick them to invest your money. Ariel O'Shea covers investment for NerdWallet.
They're really just trying to grow their market share, although, you know, we've seen that price drops in the past haven't necessarily contributed to a big difference in market share.
Fidelity on Tuesday announced its new trade commission fee will be about $5, down from $8. Schwab announced soon after that its fee would be the same. Mike Allmeyer teaches finance at the University of Virginia. He says that commission is less important these days.
You're looking at firms like Fidelity and Schwab who are more interested in getting customers in the door so they can sell them other services.
Services like retirement planning and personal investment advice. Either way, lowering fees is a win for individual investors. Greg McBride is at Bankrate.com.
This isn't just about reduced commissions on stock trades. We've seen lower expenses on index funds and exchange-traded funds. On multiple fronts, there are ways for consumers to reduce their investment expenses, and that's the win.
It looks like a sort of restructuring in the asset management business. Consumers have a bunch of options, and they're getting pickier. Again, Mike Allmeyer.
If you're a financial services company that was historically in the trading business, you need to find another revenue stream somehow.
Firms like Fidelity and Schwab aren't just in the trading business. They'll likely weather this price war. TD Ameritrade gets almost half of its revenue from those commissions. It lowered its fee, but it still sits at almost $7. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Greece and the international coalition to which it owes a whole bunch of money are working their way through a revised agreement that could, emphasis on the could here, get Athens some financial breathing room. The Greek government is hoping the recent populist wave could help persuade creditors it's time for an end to years of austerity because, as the BBC's Kevin Connolly reports from Athens, everyday Greeks are just about out of gas.
In a soulless white concrete court building in a nondescript suburb of Athens, Greek anger at deficit and debt and deadlines set by banks boils over. The protesters are from a movement called I Won't Pay. They fill the courtroom, crowding onto the judicial bench and spilling over into the witness box. The people sick of austerity, says the activist Ilias Papadopoulos.
50% of Greek people are poor, poor in their limits of indignity. And we are here to protect all these people.
Sollen sich überzeugen, dass ihre Kinder gut aufgehoben sein werden. Und
for many young Greeks, the only answer lies in leaving.
Morgen, which means tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah. Heute.
Heute, today.
Nikos Lianos is brushing up his German, looking forward to starting a new job as a civil engineer. But it's in Austria.
I feel excited. I don't know about you, but I feel excited.
He's due to leave home the day after he marries his fiancée, Anastasia, next month. It's a tough choice, but they see no hope that Greece will offer them any kind of future.
I don't think that they will find a solution. I'm totally convinced that Greece won't have a future. I'm a civil engineer, and I can't find a job that I love in engineering.
Greece feels exhausted by austerity. Even the rag and bone man working the streets of Athens around us for scrap metal was coming up with nothing. But after seven lean years, the Greek government is suddenly sensing that a tide is turning in its favour. Deputy Foreign Minister Yorgos Katrougalos says the same populist mood that gave us Brexit and President Trump is going to help his government to build international support when it pushes back against the IMF and the Eurozone.
There's a general disenchantment of all peoples of Europe, especially in Greece, because we have been hit by the austerity much more harder than in the rest of the Europe. This is the real question, how to reverse austerity. And I think that there is hope in that, exactly because the elite cannot govern as in the past. The election of Trump proves that. And why? Because the peoples do not want to be governed as before.
There really ought to be a science called Buskonomics that would measure the mood in an economy and the income of its street musicians. And by that measure, Greece is still feeling pretty flat. The government here may claim to see light at the end of the tunnel, but for ordinary Greeks, the tunnel still seems very long, and the light vanishingly dim.
The BBC's Kevin Connolly in Athens for us. Coming up,
the strength of the currency is not set by the Germans.
And yet they still get blamed for it. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 112 points today, about a half percent, 21,002 for the blue chips. The Nasdaq lost 42.7%, 5861. The S&P 500 dropped 14 points, about a half percent, 2381. We told you earlier about Snap, a little context here. With a market capitalization now of $33 billion, Snap is in Target and Twitter territory, just so you know. Shares in heavy equipment maker Caterpillar took a pounding today as federal investigators searched its facilities in Illinois. Shares down 4.2%. For investors needing a little pick-me-up, energy drinks producer Monster Beverage added a highly caffeinated 12.75% today after announcing gangbuster earnings. National Beverage slid 0.9%. Ticker symbol, by the way, is FIZZ, F-I-Z-Z. Bonds fell. The yield on the I get paid for this. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.48%. You're listening to Marketplace. If you want to get smarter about the things we talk about on this program every day,
technology, the economy, pop culture,
check out our podcast. It's called Make Me Smart. Me and Molly Wood.
We've got new episodes every week. Find us at marketplace.org/makemesmart or wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow us on Twitter for updates. I'm at Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm at Molly Wood.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. During his speech to Congress on Tuesday night, President Trump reiterated his promise to step up immigration enforcement. We have covered that story as an infrastructure problem, needing more detention centers and sheer physical capacity for all the people who are going to be deported. But it's a labor force problem, too, right? The Trump administration wants to hire 5,000 more Border Patrol agents, 10,000 ICE officers over the next few years. So Emma Jacobs went to a job fair at Temple University in Philadelphia, where Homeland Security had a table.
In the Temple Student Center, the room is packed with undergraduates who are studying criminal justice. Traffic is heavy at the table of Homeland Security Investigations, a division of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It tackles international gangs, smuggling, and human trafficking cases. And that kind of work sounds attractive to Adam Leisure. He's a 19-year-old sophomore who says he's wanted a job in federal law enforcement since he was a sophomore in high school. He's dressed in a suit, hoping to find an internship.
Immigration, it's a hot topic right now, like with all immigration with President Trump and stuff like that. But I think that when they enforce the laws that they have to, such as getting the big cartels and that stuff out of the borders, I think it's very important and very interesting.
That's more what the investigations unit here today does, less everyday deportations. The two recruiters representing the department said they couldn't talk to members of the press. But Holly Logan, the staff member at Temple whose job is to connect public employers and students, says she's hearing from her federal government contacts that they'll be looking for border agents soon. So she expects to see more recruiters.
They would attempt likely to come on campus more and to interact more with students in a variety of ways.
Customs and Border Patrol in particular had already been struggling to fill open positions under the Obama administration. Part of the reason is the agency's screening process in place because of the temptations that come with working on border smuggling routes. But it also has to do with the remote work locations and other demands of the job. Professor Cheryl Irons, who teaches criminal law at Temple, says she's had two previous students hired by Customs and Border Patrol.
Criminal justice students are always interested in federal law enforcement because they actually pay much better than regular local or county or city agencies are going to pay.
So while the Trump administration's plan to hire more immigration agents was news to Janine Simmons, actually a political science major looking for a federal job, she was happy to hear it.
Well, that's good. That's helpful. That's encouraging, especially like hearing people having difficulties getting jobs out of college.
Another senior on the job market right now, Talib Hall, is looking at everything from working with a city police department to a federal role in law enforcement. When asked about whether politics in Washington might influence his decision about whether to pursue something local or national, he says it could.
You need to think about things more and know what you're getting into and know what, when people look at you, what you're going to represent in their eyes.
He'd rather not say if this consideration is pushing him one way or the other. Right now, we're at a career fair, Hall says, and I'm looking for a job. In Philadelphia, I'm Emma Jacobs for Marketplace.
We started with a piece on currency, the dollar. We're going to go out on a piece about currency as well, the euro this time. Peter Navarro, the head of President Trump's new National Trade Council, calls the single currency grossly undervalued, and he blames directly the Germans, who Navarro says are getting an unfair trade advantage over their American competitors because the euro is so cheap. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports this is just the latest in a string of complaints about the strength of the German economy at the expense of many, many others.
Buckingham Palace is festooned with swastikas. German soldiers patrol the London streets. The Nazis have occupied Britain.
This is the BBC Home Service. On orders from the German army, the curfew will be relaxed from Monday.
The opening scene in a new BBC drama, which imagines Hitler winning the war. The world rejoices that he didn't. After defeat, Germany evolved into a peace-loving, democratic and benign modern state. But in a paradoxical twist of history, Germany still dominates Europe. And, says economist Roger Bootle, thanks to the creation of the euro, the Germans have unintentionally helped cause mayhem on the continent.
Misery in southern Europe, an economic disaster, frankly, in Greece. It would have been much better if Germany had kept the Deutschmark.
Priced in euros, Germany's products are much cheaper than they would otherwise have been. That's turned the country into a champion exporter, but also helped plunge its poorer, less competitive European partners into debt and deficit, while it racks up ever larger trade surpluses.
Germany is running a current account surplus of getting on for 9% of GDP. This surplus is, in absolute terms, bigger than the Chinese surplus.
The Trump administration has now accused Germany of boosting its exports at the expense of American jobs and businesses and unfairly profiting from a grossly undervalued currency. That accusation effectively lumps it in with China and Japan as a currency manipulator. Many Germans bridle at that.
The strength of the currency is not set by the Germans. It is set by the ECB, and the president, last time I looked, was an Italian.
German commentator Heinz Schulte says the weakness of the euro is due to the European Central Bank printing money, buying government bonds and driving down interest rates.
All that is definitely not German.
But he must concede his country has done very nicely out of the euro and its recent weakness.
That is true, but the Germans will pick up all the taps if there is failure and a breakdown of the system.
Though German exporters have profited from the euro, few European observers believe that was the country's main motivation in adopting it. It was part of the process of ever closer European integration to avoid another war and for Germany to atone for its Nazi crimes. In this, the euro has spectacularly backfired. These are Greek reservists parading on the day the German leader visited Athens at the height of the debt crisis. Incredibly, they're shouting, Nazis out. Their commander said, "We're protesting against the Fourth Reich, against German oppressors imposing austerity." Steve Davies is with the Institute of Economic Affairs.
The fact that the country which is in the dominant position is Germany, which has all these historical associations, is doubly unfortunate. You know, in Greece, memories of the war are still quite fresh.
If the Germans want to placate their critics in Europe and the US, he says, they've just got to lighten up on the exporting.
What they can do is try to shift the balance of their economy away from a very heavy reliance upon exports to much greater reliance upon domestic consumption.
And to import more, he says, the survival of the euro and transatlantic relations could depend upon it. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, a reminder to always, always answer your emails. Chris Sacca, he's a pretty well-known venture investor. Twitter, Instagram, Kickstarter, to name a couple of places he got in on the ground floor. He tweeted out a picture today. It's a screenshot of an email he got from one of Snap's founders asking if Sacca wanted to have lunch, talk about the company, you know, schmooze. Quote, "I know who didn't get rich in the Snapchat IPO," Sacca wrote. "The guy who didn't answer this email." Ouch. Repeat after me, y'all. Stocks go down, too. The Dow off 112 today, about a half percent. The NASDAQ down 42.7%. S&P 500 off 14 points. That is a half percent there. John Buckley, Deirdre Debke, Eve Epstein, Danielle Irby, Suzanne Levy, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. Our interim managing editor, again, for now, is John Gordon. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.